Hey guys, welcome back to the Crypto Economy Podcast. Today we have a representative of Ocean Protocol here with us. So thanks so much for being here, Trent.
Hi there, and thanks for having me.
So to get started, could you just tell us a little bit about what Ocean Protocol is and why it was built in the first place?
Sure. So overall, Ocean Protocol is a protocol for sharing data, and it's really meant to unlock data such that there is a more level playing field for different people to be using data and to get benefits from it. And this is sort of related to the why. Right now, we're seeing that a lot of data is being piled into giant silos that we consumers don't have a lot of control over. And that's a negative thing, but we've been able to twist it into a positive thing with Ocean in the sense of, hey, we can change this. We can make it where, rather than the Googles and Facebooks of the world mining us and us being users of it, can we sort of change the rules of the game by going to the protocol level, one level below, and let people really control their data and choose how it's used. In a much more fine-grained way and unlock new opportunities too, with things like, privacy-preserving AI and all this.
So, how long have you been building, and what have been the biggest challenges so far?
I mean, a bit of background, right? Ocean is intersecting both AI and blockchain. So my AI background goes back to the mid-90s when I started doing it professionally. And I've been doing blockchain in a pretty big capacity since 2013. So then, with blockchain, we started with IP on the blockchain, a project called Ascribe, and then we led that sort of led to another project called BigchainDB, which was basically a database that was decentralized, sort of wrapping MongoDB, giving it BFT, all this. And the learnings from Ascribe, sort of IP, blockchain, all that, helping to get compensators created, sorry, creators compensated. And BigchainDB with sort of data at scale, and then the AI background, all these th things kind of converged with early thoughts on how blockchain could help AI and how blockchain could help big data. And those thoughts were sort of like late 2016 timeframe. We wrote about them, and what we saw there was that all roads kind of pointed to data exchange, decentralized data exchanges, where people can be. Buying and selling data, and you don't want to just have one, that would be its own sort of silo. You really want to have a whole ecosystem of them. A whole bunch of marketplaces for buying and selling data, but at the same time, ways to share that. So this was, early 2017. Then people came to us and said, hey, this is really interesting. Most notably, Toyota Research came to us and said, hey, we'd really like to have a prototype data exchange for pooling data across various automakers, including Toyota. And because they saw that any individual company, such as Toyota, if they just went for it on their own, they wouldn't have enough data for years and years and years to have safe enough self-driving cars. But if they could pool their data with many other automakers, then that could really help to accelerate the timeline towards safe self-driving cars. So we built that for them as a prototype throughout the spring of 2017.
So are
And
they trying to get like Tesla data, for example, because they're so far ahead and they're sort of hoping that owners will opt in their own personal vehicle data? Is that sort of the idea?
I mean, at the time, people didn't see that Tesla was far ahead. It was Waymo, Google was way ahead. So, but basically, the non-incumbents, right? It wasn't the traditional automakers like Toyota or Ford or GM or anything. It was, Waymo and now Waymo and Tesla, right? And so, yes, and the general idea is more opt-in from the level of the consumers. In a way that benefits the consumers, that benefits the automakers. And the automakers saw it as basically, the future is self-driving cars, as well as ride-sharing, as well as electric, right? The sort of triumvirate of, massive change coming to the automotive industry. So what can they do about that to sort of retain a strong market position, if not a leadership position, but hopefully a leadership position? And they saw that, on the self-driving car side, pooling of data would be a big benefit.
Ah, that makes sense. So, like, aside from automotive, what are sort of the other types of big data that AI is really looking to utilize to train the models? Are there certain data sets that you guys are really interested in? How do you decide what's useful, what's not useful, and who are you talking to figure that out?
Sure, and maybe just to close off the last part of the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Ocean, from this, the initial prototype was actually built by riffing on BigGenieB technology, but then we realized, it really made sense to have its own protocol that drew on other, really great characteristics of blockchains, such as blockchains as incentive machines, where you can get people to do stuff by paying them in tokens, just like Bitcoin pays people to add to its security by paying them in Bitcoin tokens every 10 minutes, right? With 12.5 Bitcoins, and then after the halving last. So we saw that, and then that's basically what led to the Ocean Protocol project, which we officially announced in September of 2017. And we've been basically going through the process ever since of, raising money around it, building an initial prototype, taking it to an alpha state and then a beta state, and then production for the sort of V1 last July. And now, we've got some usage, but we have, basically we're working with several different partners on specific verticals and problems to solve to basically get, real usage and to really, solve the problems we were aiming for initially. So to loop back then to your question of, what other verticals, another big one that we see is health in general. As an example, if you are a data scientist or a researcher trying to, predict Parkinson's, then you might go to a hospital and get the data from that one hospital. And that might be maybe, say, 10,000 data sets if you're lucky, right? 10,000 people if you're lucky. A friend of mine, he's an AI researcher, and he works on genetic data. And he's a happy genetic data for cancer prediction. And mm-hmm. he's a happy person if he has a data set of 100 people. So it's just really, really hard to get your hands on a lot of data. And so the traditional solution is to say, okay, well, let's try to pool a lot more data together and then have custody of it. And this is what some of the big giants are starting to do now, where they're getting together data from 10 or 50 or more hospitals and then sort of pooling it together. But then there's pushback. So Google is doing this as well as many others. But there's pushback. We've seen that with the Google project and so on. And they're decentralizing partly in the sense of they're calling it federated learning. And there's some of the data gets to stay at the level of the inside each hospital. But Google still plays middleman on all the training and on the final model. So then you can have a lot of personally identifiable information leak out there. So you really need to decentralize not just the data, but also the orchestration to be training the models, and then also have decentralized control of the final model, because otherwise, people can go in and reverse engineer the models and yank out the data there. So, but the end benefit, like, what is the overall goal here, right, for the health? And it is basically like radically better models. Imagine instead, with AI, people have known now for since the early 2000s that if you add more data, you can get way lower error. And that can, 10x lower error, 100x and more. Instead of, say, 20% error where it's not usable at all, maybe you get to 5% or 1% error where it's usable, and then you get to 0.1% error and it's amazing. So, and it depends on the application. Sometimes it's 5%, sometimes it's 0.01%. It really depends, right? You don't want 5% error in a self-driven car. That would mean one in every 20 drives would crash. But, doctor error in misdiagnosing, some of the stats are where it's around a third of the time, which is actually, quite sad, but I can understand. I put myself in the shoes of doctors. There's a lot of literature to keep up on. They have a lot of work, etc. So imagine then you can have an AI model that is trained on not just 100 people, like my friend is trying to work on, or 10,000 people, but a million, or 10 million, or even a billion. Right? That could drive the errors for predicting Parkinson's, for predicting the various forms of cancer, down by an order of magnitude or more. Right? So we can have not only more accurate diagnoses, we can do it much earlier. For cancer, that can make all the difference, right? Right now, a lot of cancer diagnosis is at stage 2 or stage 3. Stage 3, it's like, okay, well, it's been nice knowing you. Stage 1, it's a radically different change, because then you can start to do something about it in a really big way, right? So this is what really excites me is, just getting way more data to build these models for detecting, for diagnosing diseases, but then also for identifying what is the most appropriate treatment, and then for managing the disease in general. So that's a big one. And there's others too we can talk about, but maybe I'll pause there.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. So for the healthcare specifically, when you're looking to train these models? Are you mostly just trying to aggregate health records? Are you trying to combine that with, things like fitness, like wearables or sensors or other things? Do you guys have sort of a formula in mind to how you'll start that process and where you'll get the data and how you'll analyze it, et cetera?
Yeah, so the way that we see it is Ocean Protocol is really the platform to help on the sort of the lower levels of decentralized orchestration. So that's one way to just describe sort of what Ocean does is decentralized orchestration. And then a subset of that is decentralized access control. So, hey, you're allowed to grab this data set. Hey, you're allowed to write this data here. Hey, you're allowed to do compute here. So think of it like Unix permissions, like read, write, execute, in a sort of decentralized fashion to manage that, right? And one of the key things is that Ocean can bring compute to the data, so the data itself can stay at these, last miles within the consumer's phones or within the hospital, whatever. And then the AI compute is done next to the data itself, right? So then to your question of what is our strategy on which sort of data sets and whatnot? We don't claim to be experts at medical or any specific vertical per se, right? What we do is we work with lead partners who are the experts. So we are working with lead partners in the mobility space. And that some of that's actually a direct descendant of our initial work with Toyota through this consortium called Mobi, which represents 80% of the world's automakers in terms of production. And so in the healthcare space too, we have specific partners that we're working with where they have their vision of what fields that they want to be using, and then like aggregating those. And they have their initial fields of, hey, we want to use this genetic data here or et cetera, et cetera. And then they run with that, right? So we're doing this with sort of partners that have, in many cases, have sort of preloaded ecosystems, in the sense of supply of data as well as where the data can, how the data might be consumed. But then also that's sort of a bit of a top-downy way of viewing it. There's also the bottom up where, just develop small developer teams come to us and say, hey, let's build an ocean. And then they build, really interesting applications in various places for various
So could
domains.
you maybe go into a few of those applications? So I know you kind of have this platform. I know it's open source. You have a lot of people building on it. What are some of the most exciting things that people are building, and what do you hope people will build on it in the future?
Yeah, for sure. So another one in the healthcare space is so we just wrapped up actually sort of a prize called the Data Economy Challenge, and in fact it's not even done. We haven't done the judging yet or anything, but there's some of the projects out there are quite prominent because its teams have been doing other things. So one of the ones, and it's a team that we've known for a long time, is the Molecule team, and they are basically working on management of IP for drugs, drug discovery, et cetera, and drugs as in molecules, right? That's really what the IP is around that, is sort of the shapes of the molecules for certain drugs. And with Ocean, then, those drugs can be, those molecules can be treated as data that are bought and sold in a data marketplace. And, they put in pricing with bonding curves and things like that. So that's, one, a very nice specific example. And some of the other ones, I don't want to bias too much to any one team, so even I don't want to bias towards Molecule too much. But in the past, there's been hackathons we've been a part of too, and there's been teams doing privacy-preserving compute. So not just the compute to data, but there's other things such as multi-party compute, MPC, working with Ocean, where the data sets are coming through Ocean. So there's a team that built that with Ocean. There's another team that built basically, as part of this Outlier Ventures Diffusion Hackathon a couple months ago, basically an education platform for students to be sharing data related to testing scores that they can sort of share and then collaborate in a way where it's just helps them with their education as they proceed. And we're going to be able to talk about a lot more of these from this most recent Data Economy Challenge in the next week or two or three. It's just not quite yet, so a few more are
Yeah,
public, but
sure.
that kind of gives you a feel. And I guess one other one that we see coming down the pipe in a pretty strong way is with cities actually. So a lot of cities, there's a lot of talk about smart cities, and smart is misused here, just like it is misused in with smart contracts, right? But in the case of cities, what this means is really being data aware, and then being able to, have really good sensors about what's going on through the city in terms of traffic flow, in terms of temperature, in terms of, you know, where water is flowing for sewage and for supply and all of that. And then that being taken into decision-making processes that can then update their model of what's going on in the city and then actuate on that in the sort of feedback system. So things like for cities, one example is simply traffic management, right? Where there can be sensors in the traffic lights that can optical sensors of what's going on around in terms of traffic flow. And that can really improve the city's model of where the traffic is, especially during rush hour. And then the traffic lights can all turn on in a way where you can really clear out like five intersections in a row on a really busy street in the height of rush hour. So these sorts of things can really make a difference. But once you have these optical sensors on these traffic lights, then you can start to use it for them for other things as well. So sort of smart cities is very, very useful. And, you know, there's cities that have had a lot of data. You know, one of my favorite examples going in the past is Tallinn, which is really Estonia, right? So Estonia and Tallinn are sort of one and the same because most of the population of Estonia lives in Tallinn. And they've had a really great data management platform going back 20 years called X-Road. And from that, they've been able to have a whole set of amazing applications built on top in this sort of digital native fashion for the city and for the government and whatnot. And so we see that as a very nice sort of archetype of how you can have benefits going in the past. And if you're going to build sort of smart city infrastructure today, then you would leverage, you know, the a lot of the technologies that are now available today, including blockchain technology. And that's where really Ocean fits in. But Ocean plays well with X-Road too. So that's, you know, we're excited about that as well.
Yeah, that's a great segue. I was just going to ask you, how do you sort of approach international expansion going into different markets? I know it says you guys have, you know, like 3,000 members doing group meetups in 10 different countries. So you have a pretty decentralized base of users and developers, supporters. How do you decide where to put resources and where to try out projects in places like Tallinn?
Yeah, well, I would say overall, We don't constrain ourselves to any one region or anything. And, you know, with things like the Data Economy Challenge, we put out these prizes for people building, you know, marketplace and other last mile apps for people doing integrations and for people doing wildcards. And, you know, we've seen applications from all over the globe and like from just really obscure places, we're seeing really great results, really great products and technologies coming out. So, you know, it's our aim to, help pour gasoline in those flames, you know, to help nurture those projects that are doing really great things all over. You know, a lot of the core team is based in Germany. And so we naturally gravitate towards, for some of our efforts, you know, towards folks who are in Europe. You know, we have quite a sizable community in the Netherlands, for example, and we spend a lot of time there. You know, there's an upcoming hackathon, Odyssey. It's actually Europe's largest blockchain and AI hackathon. And we're working with several of the tracks there for various teams and efforts. One of them is for smart cities with The Hague on the Conscious Cities track, the City of The Hague. There's other ones with Nature 2.0 with JP Dumernick and that. There's other ones on energy, working with Energy Web Foundation and so on. So there are some places where just by virtue of where a lot of our team is located, we kind of gravitate there. But overall, we're really trying to catalyze and encourage sort of this global growth. And there's different needs around data in various places, right? You know, the Western countries have different needs than otherwise. But also what's cool is if you're getting benefit from selling data in somewhere that the cost of living is radically lower, like say rural India compared to Germany, then you can get a lot of, like, if you start getting income from data, it can really move the needle for you in a big way compared to in Germany.
Yeah. Have you found that, like, in places like Europe, that GDPR has created more of an incentive for people to work with you guys, especially on sort of the buy side? I guess sort of how have you noticed things change over there as a result of that, or have you noticed change at all?
Yeah, well, actually, there's a lot of relationships of Ocean and GDPR, I think. From the pure, you know, sort of Ocean adoption standpoint, it's really useful because Ocean is designed where it's GDPR friendly. So if you are a startup and you don't want to deal with GDPR in a big way, you know, you don't want to hold any consumer data, then the Ocean answer is great. Just let the consumer hold it, and Ocean will help to orchestrate how you need to handle it, right? So you as a startup can just send your data to the consumer's smartphone and do the computation there and just get the results. So your exposure to the consumer's data is a lot lower, right? And that's really, really useful. It's sort of one analogy there is, rewind to 2013. If you were building a web startup, you would have to do, and you wanted to handle credit card payments, you'd have to be PCI compliant. And that would, if you really want to be properly PCI compliant, it would cost you about 100K, which is a huge expense for any startup. And Stripe came along and said, guess what? Copy and paste these 5 lines of JavaScript, and you're going to be PCI compliant. We'll take care of the rest. So startups didn't have to worry about PCI compliance because Stripe allowed them to basically not have to think about that. Stripe had a technology to sort of handle that, think about that. It's similar with Ocean in the sense of the consumer data stays with the consumer if you set it up right, right? And Ocean can help you, like Ocean can help you with that. It's not quite as easy as Stripe yet. It's not 5 lines of JavaScript, but that's kind of one of the aims is to make it that easy over time. And so we see that it's very, very beneficial for startups and other companies asking themselves, how do we properly handle GDPR? And like I said, it's the data itself stays with the consumer or stays behind firewalls and so on. And then Ocean helps to orchestrate the bringing compute to the data. So that's the main thing. Ocean itself was designed, related to this. Probably it's obvious now that I've explained. Ocean itself really minimizes. It doesn't have any personal data on chain, right? Because that's a problem with a lot of blockchains. If you put any personally identifiable information on chain, GDPR says, well, you need to have the right to be forgotten,
Yep.
right? So what do you do about that? So what's on chain with Ocean is just very, very thin. It's basically like what public keys or slash Ethereum addresses have what access to what services in terms of URIs, right? So it's sort of binding. It's saying, okay, this Ethereum address can access this URI, right? Or has whatever other accesses, this read access, this write access, this execute access, right? So that's really the way we think about it. And then the data blobs themselves stay on premise, and the metadata for discovery is one layer up in the last mile marketplace, whatever, and that can be decentralized or centralized, right?
Yep, that makes sense. Could you tell me a little bit about how the tokens interplay with this? So if I'm, a user, what does the token mean to me? How do I get them? And what do I do with them once I have them?
For sure, yeah. So the Ocean token, to get them, we're listed on some major exchanges. So if you go to any of the like the first listing we had was with Bittrex, and there are other exchanges that use this as well. So you can go to CoinMarketCap or whatever and see the different exchanges that we're listed on. Obviously, some of them have fake volumes and stuff, but I won't go there.
Yeah.
But that's basically how you get your hands on it. Other ways, though, is to sort of earn it, right? Via things like the Data Economy Challenge. And we're going to be having a continual sort of ecosystem efforts where people can be earning tokens in ways where it's adding value to the ecosystem. So, for anyone interested, keep an eye on our channel, all that on oceanprotocol.com, etc. So then the questions, what are the token dynamics? So in the initial design of Ocean, which was in our white paper that we published in early 2018 and even talked about in late 2017, and the first version as well as the version from last year, we really went down the route of basically trying incentivizing for a supply of data so that it's really about maximizing the supply of relevant data to the users, because Ocean is really about this data economy for people buying and selling data as well as the data commons. So how do you incentivize for that? Well, you want to have a lot of data. How do you incentivize for that? And so in that design, we used staking as a means for people to signal which data sets were higher quality. So if you think something's higher quality, you stake on it. And then if you make those data sets available, then and then others consume them, you get paid in terms of inflation by the network. So just like Bitcoin pays network pays you in Bitcoin tokens, if you add security to the Bitcoin network, Ocean design has been you get paid in Ocean tokens if you add if data to the Ocean network where other people are consuming that, and you get paid more the more that you have staked. So that's sort of been the design for Ocean. We are in the process of refining the design such that it's been sort of 2.5 years since a lot of those initial designs were done. We've had this basic there's been a lot of learnings that we've had, as well as a lot of the community. So we see for sort of these core dynamics, it's going to include this objective of maximize the supply of relevant data. There will be a staking element. There will be elements for people to do work to add value. But that design is a work in progress, and we're keeping it kind of under wraps until we get a bit farther and we get feedback from, you know, key members of the community. So how you use Ocean Token today, you can, people can and have built data marketplaces where you are buying and selling data with Ocean Tokens. And that's actually built into the Ocean smart contract itself already. But that's a, you know, very super simple version of Ocean usage. We see that over time, you know, that shouldn't even be a constraint, where you should be able to buy and sell data with any tokens or even fiat. And in fact, we've started to see people do that, where there's, you know, fiat on ramps and stuff, where people are buying, you know, they have prototype marketplaces where people are buying data with just, you know, fiat. And we think that's really great. Under the hood, it can use Ocean, but for that last mile, it's got a conversion to fiat. That's fine. So that's kind of where we're at with Ocean tokens. Overall, there's going to be, there's a basic version now. Future versions of Ocean will have elements to basically get people to do stuff that add value to the ecosystem.
Can I ask you how you sort of decided which exchanges you would be listed on and what the process was for that?
So overall, it's... I'll be honest, I'm more of the technologist, so it's not something I spend a lot of real time at. And in general, we have to be also very careful about how we talk about it because of, you know, regulatory concerns.
Yep.
I guess the main thing I can say is that my co-founder, Bruce Pahn, before he founded Ocean and these other blockchain projects with me and our third co-founder, he actually spent about more than 10 years building banks all around the world. He built the first bank for Daimler here in Berlin, and then several other banks for Daimler, and then other big industrials. So he had a lot of experience in thinking about the regulations, financial regulations and banking, and sort of thinking about, the regulations as well as what do you do about it with what you're trying to accomplish. So we drew on a lot of that expertise, and that sort of... just great desire to be 100% above board. And generally, as far as we can see, we have. So we went way out of our way drawing this experience. With the various, raises that we did in terms of token generation events, then we always follow the regulations. So
If you don't have the SEC banging down your door, you're probably in a good place.
Absolutely, yeah, for sure, right? And you know, we work closely with CoinList, and we did some token generation with CoinList, some token generation with Bittrex as well, right? For the initial exchange offering. So mm-hmm. We work very closely with them, and they are two institutions that have excellent records for being above board. And USA is the hardest jurisdiction. So by serving that really well, a lot of the other ones kind of fell in place.
Yeah, that makes sense. So as far as other things that you guys have utilized the tokens for, I know you guys have like bounties and things like that. So have you found that giving away tokens to incent developers to help out has been successful? And are people, putting in the work to get these tokens? I guess also similarly with things like XPRIZE, where you're doing the same thing.
Yeah, so we've used some bounties in the past. I guess the thing that we're doing now, Data Economy Challenge, we launched that in the fall of last year, where we allocated more than 3 million Ocean tokens on prices of today. It's more than 100K worth of tokens towards teams to be building. We had more than, I believe, 180 teams register. And but of course, a lot of them register and there's not a lot that comes out of it. But several dozen teams came with submissions that were, something not negligible. And so some really, really cool things came out of that, right? So we've seen that as a nice success. There will be more on that in coming weeks. We see on that, too, that we are going, I think I mentioned already, we're going to be using this as a follow-up to help nurture the really great teams towards building other things. We also see, though, that over time, we're keeping a close eye on what's going on with the sort of sustainable funding ecosystems out there. So where the community itself can propose lots of projects, then the community itself can be vetting the projects, and there's a steady supply of tokens for people to be getting paid as they add value to the ecosystem, right? And there's some long-running projects that have been doing this. Dash is probably known to be the longest running, been doing this for a few years now. And then more recently, there's Decred, and even more recently, there's Cosmos and Tezos. And then, in the last year, we've had this mini explosion of DAOs within the Ethereum space, most notably Moloch and Metacartel. And so all of these are really instructive. And there's obviously a lot more going on too. So we're keeping a close eye on that and talking with a lot of the community to see how can we leverage these learnings towards Ocean, and as well as the other DAO platforms, Aragon, DAO Stack, etc., Colony. All of these, there's really great stuff being done here, and I think the overall ecosystem is sort of learning. Not, I mean, the blockchain ecosystem is learning, what works, what doesn't. And so we've actually, we're going to be going down this path more and more towards, a sustainable ocean data economy ecosystem where the teams that are adding value, not just in terms of adding data, but, apps and stuff on top, then there can be a path to sustainability for them, which means, with a bunch of teams in the ecosystem, it's a path to sustainability for the overall ecosystem, right? Leveraging network rewards, community proposed projects, community curated projects.
Yep, that makes sense. So when it comes to sort of next steps for you guys, what is sort of big and up and coming in 2020? And what companies that sort of aren't in your space necessarily are you excited to see building in 2020? I guess ones that you're paying attention to.
Yeah, so for us, I guess, like we will be doing a sort of a more thorough announcement of the big projects we have coming for 2020. But probably the big thing that's going to be coming out fairly soon now is the compute to data. And it's something that's been a key part of a roadmap for almost the lifetime of the project, right? And that's really important for people who want to imagine, you can sell data. Yet at the same time, you don't actually ever have a data escape. So you can keep your data private, yet at the same time monetize it. And it almost sounds like a paradox, right? But the solution is, your data stays in your smartphone or behind your firewall or whatever, and the compute is brought to that data to do the computations, to train an AI model, or to maybe just even compute an average across many, many people's phones or something. And then the results of that is what people are really interested in, right? So we're very excited about that. We see that it has a lot of use cases, from the perspective of preserving privacy, things like the healthcare and otherwise. It also has pretty cool ramifications in terms of economic impact, because if you don't have normally data has this problem of non-exclusivity, right? If you're selling data, people can grab it, download it, but then they can copy it, copy it, copy it. And yes, there's maybe exclusivity in the license, which is useful. But imagine if you can have sort of physical exclusivity where those bits can't even be copied because it stays behind a single person's phone or firewall, right? So you're actually adding this, pretty big economic characteristic to data itself. And we see that as super exciting for people building data marketplaces and stuff because it can really drive the value of data itself. So, this is coming fairly soon. We'll have more details on that in weeks to come on what this means, as well as the lead partners that we've been working on. We haven't announced that in any way yet. Another thing that we've been hinting at that's going to come in a strong way in 2020 is data tokens. And so, data tokens basically are basically it's tokenized access control for read, write, execute, if you will, right? For reading data, for writing data, for executing on data, doing computation, just like we do with computed data. But imagine that it's following the Web3 interfaces, right? Of ERC20, ERC721, and then composables on top of that, right? So we have this amazing infrastructure for holding tokens, with wallets for ERC20 and NFTs, fungible and non-fungible. So wallets that are basically custodianship, as well as management of those financial tokens, right? Ether, Bitcoin, etc. And that has matured quite a lot. We have multi-sig, we have DAOs to manage this in bigger ways, and then we have this whole emerging DeFi space for that too, right? So hold that in mind for a second, and then think about how data management traditionally has worked. Inside the enterprise, you've got maybe a chief data officer, maybe a chief information officer. You've got some sysadmins. You've got various people that hold passwords to various pieces of data, right? And it's super messy, right? You have these firewalls, but in a big company, it's sort of the model that I like to think about is it's an M&M where you have this hard candy shell and then the yummy chocolate on the inside. And if you manage to pierce any of that hard candy shell, you get to eat all the chocolate on the inside, right?
I
And that's
like
what
the
it,
analogy.
right? It's crazy, right? And so that's basically where we see all these data breaches happening. Even the biggest companies in the world that are supposed to be good at this have had breaches, like LinkedIn and Yahoo, and even Facebook has had data breaches. And the companies that you haven't publicly had data breaches almost certainly have anyway, because there's just data management is hard. There's so many potential gotchas. But if you think about blockchain, right? Think about Bitcoin. What is it that needs to be secured? It's just a list of transactions, right? So it flips the M&M model on its head. You've got this super hard nugget in the center, rock hard, and it's just a list of transactions, and it's got 10,000 copies, right? And those copies, as long as a sufficient majority of them keep in sync with each other, then you can't penetrate that, right? It's like, can you imagine robbing 10,000 banks? You just can't, right? Now, the way you could rob is or take it is if there's a bug somewhere, right? But Bitcoin is a built-in bug bounty machine, right? If I'm a super hacker and I manage to find a flaw in Bitcoin and exploit it, I could steal $1 billion or $10 billion. But that hasn't happened to Bitcoin. A large, Bitcoin has been stolen from the core of Bitcoin protocol for a long, long, long time, right? As far as I know, like the last major bugs in Bitcoin that way were, maybe transaction malleability in 2013, something around there, right?
Maybe
So.
Google playing with quantum toys.
Yeah, maybe, right? But even quantum, it's not as much of an issue, for the core of the transactions, right? Because it's the hashes. So,
It just speeds it up.
yeah, exactly, right? So that said, the point is, blockchains change the security model in a really wonderful way. We've been using this so far for custody and transfer, that is management of financial assets mostly, right? But we can also do it for management of data assets, right? So we can leverage all this amazing blockchain infrastructure that has this completely different security model for management of data assets. So now, the CIO, et cetera, they've got multi-sig wallets, or hardware wallets, or paper wallets, or maybe brain wallets, who knows? All this infrastructure that has been developed for crypto custody and crypto asset management, we can leverage for really, really upgrading management of data assets. And just like in crypto, where we're taking what was better than bank grade security, and it can come to the consumer, we can do that with data too now. Where people's personal wallets, whether it's a Trezor hardware wallet or a wallet on the phone or whatever, you can now leverage that really great security model for personal data management. And this is really what Ocean is about with the data tokens, right? So data tokens are basically tokens that are fungible or non-fungible that will draw on a lot of the characteristics of ERC-20, ERC-721, mostly compatible in that way. But then basically can be used for data management, right? And then all the benefits that you get from that. So that's what we're really excited about there. And it's not just the data management. Once you have this, then it makes it really nice to start building really great data marketplaces. Just like we have NFT marketplaces, things like OpenSea and Mintbase and so on, then these can be start leveraging data tokens as well, right? And all the DeFi stuff on top. Imagine a stablecoin that is like multi-collateral DAI, where the collateral is a million data sets, right? Where each data set has a recurring revenue stream, right? And just and there's evidences of that already, right? In the past, where data itself is IP, and there have been bonds done on IP before. Most notably, the Bowie bond, going back to the '90s, but that's been replicated many, many times too. So yeah,
That's
that's
really
basically a
interesting. I
quick.
didn't know that actually.
Yeah, so it's a quick summary then. The big sort of big features we're excited about in 2020 are computer data, which is coming soon, and then the data tokens. That's sort of at the platform level, and but then on top, it's really about a really great full-featured marketplace, and then all the amazing sort of apps that people build around Ocean and ecosystem things like first-class data wallets, all this sort of thing, right? And we're like I've sort of talked about, we're spending a lot more effort to help nurture the community to be building these things.
Do you think that there will ever be a time where people will just sort of be their own nodes in the network as far as their personal data is concerned? So, your Facebook account They won't have a centralized, server that it'll be mostly querying, either devices or on chain through like the actual protocol. Do you think that'll ever be possible?
Absolutely, right. And this is sort of the vision of sovereign personal data. So my view is that you're going to be holding your data on your device or even in a cold sort of fashion. And then you're going, let's say it's on your phone though, just to make it easy. And then you can say, okay, I'm going to give access to this app. I'm going to give access to Facebook to know my name and my birthday and my list of friends. And that's it. But then anytime you want, and Facebook itself, by the way, whenever they want to do calculations, they have to come to your phone to do computation, et cetera. Or if you let them have a cached copy, it can be where it's time constrained, maybe for 10 minutes, maybe for a day. But then basically you can say, okay, I now officially revoke my permission for Facebook to use my data. And then they don't have access anymore, and their cache has to expire, whatever you've specified, right? Or maybe they don't even have a cache, right? So as soon as you've turned off that permission, they can't see the data. And it's not, this is for Facebook, this is for Twitter, this is for email, basically all of the different digital services that we use, that can all be in our phone. And you might think, okay, well, is that even feasible in the terms of storage? And the answer is actually, Moore's Law operates in funny ways. We haven't seen a
Doesn't
speed up.
operate on iPhones.
Yeah, no, well, actually,
At
Moore's
least
Law
storage.
operates. No, Moore's Law is 2x per year for storage. And it's basically, so it's actually at a faster rate. So most of Moore's Law is 2x density for transistor density, right, in general. So every 18 months, you can have twice as many transistors in the same amount of area that you had before, right? And this is why, you can have super tiny chips now. This is why laptops have gotten super small, all that. But we hit a bottleneck in about 2002, 2005, even earlier, for speed, right? So the power density was getting to the levels of like nuclear reactor levels if you kept going with speed. So we couldn't speed things up anymore, sort of topped out at like 2 or 3 gigahertz. But what you could do is have a lot of computations running in parallel, and that's why GPUs became way more
You
parallel,
get
right?
these giant AMD CPUs with like 16 cores and your GPUs that are,
Yeah, but GPUs, they went from having 100 cores to 1,000 to 10,000 and so on, and they can just keep going and going and going, right? So GPUs play super well with Moore's Law, but so does storage, right? So this is why in the future, like even now, you can get in your smartphone, like the memory is ridiculous. Like, you can download and cache your Netflix videos, and you can have several movies sitting in your smartphone. That wasn't even conceivable 5 years ago. So it's a 2x every year. So a few years of that, you get 10x's every few years, right? And so this is why it's very conceivable to be storing all of your data on your phone, or if not that, then some sort of other nearby personal data device. And it's fully feasible, even though like computers haven't sped up, one core at a time. Storage is just radically better, right?
I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm just thinking my iPhone still has 64 gigs, and I had a 64 gig iPhone like 6 years ago. So I feel like Apple is trying to push people to the cloud on purpose now that they have their own cloud service.
They are
But
actually. It's
obviously,
exactly.
the Google phones, you can get a terabyte for $5 and a micro USB
Yeah,
USBs.
it's exactly that, right? It's business models. People have realized that business models of sort of subscription is a really nice way, and that's why Apple's trying to go there, right? But yeah, 60, like the limit they're putting is an artificial limit, right? And because if a good example just for your listeners is, you go to a local computer store, and you'll see that the cost of a thumb drive, it's $10, and you get like, I don't even know now, but it's a crazy amount
It's
compared to,
insane. Terabytes you can get for
Yeah,
that,
every time I go to the store, I'm just kind of, my gut gets surprised by what the number is now, right? Like how many terabytes or whatever you get. And that's because it's 2x a year, right? And it's an ultra competitive industry. The classic book, An Innovator's Dilemma, talked about this sort of fruit fly industry of the hard drive industry, right? That's also storage. And it's kept happening, right? For storage, for hard drives, like magnetic storage, all that, but also for storage of flash memory, right? And that's really what's inside your phone, so.
Well, very interesting. So I guess that's sort of all the questions I have. Are there any things you wanted to touch on briefly, or I can just sort of open the floor to you to wrap things up?
Yeah, I mean, I guess sort of maybe to sort of paint this in a sort of even broader vision. So I hinted at it before. What we're envisioning with Ocean is in parallel to what's happened with the money economy. So if you think about the money economy, Satoshi famously put into the very first block of Bitcoin this newspaper headline about the banks acting badly, right? And so we've been transitioning from this closed money economy to an open, transparent money economy. That is the token economy, right? We have a similar thing going on in the world of data. There is a closed data economy happening right now, a shadow data economy. And the purveyors of it are Google and Facebook that are extracting trillions in value in terms of market cap, et cetera, where, they are taking your data and using it for internal gain, but also selling it, right? Facebook is buying data from more than 150 sources, probably more than way more than that by now, right? 23andMe, I signed up with them 10 years ago, and they promised not to sell my data. Now they're selling it, and for $60, they sold my data for $60 to one
You
party,
paid them
right?
to sell it.
And I, as soon as I heard about that, I went and like tried to actually turn off my to delete my data and to download it first. And within that time frame of me trying to get it downloaded, they've been selling it to more people. So it's crazy, right? So basically, we have this shadow data economy with the likes of Google and Facebook and 23andMe and all these guys, where they see that they have this data moat, they want to keep it. But what we want to go to is an open, permissionless data economy that still preserves privacy, and that's really where what Ocean is about. So with the money economy, we're going from the old world financial ecosystem to the token economy. And with the data economy, it's all about going from this old world, if you will, shadow data economy of Facebook, Google, et cetera, to an open, permissionless data economy that preserves privacy powered by Ocean, right? That's our vision. And yeah, join us. I mean, that's my call to arms for everyone. Build on us. We see that there are just so many crazy applications that people can build on top. We've written about this. And, we see some amazing things happening. And so I guess, yeah, the best way to follow us is, oceanprotocol.com at Ocean Protocol. Yeah, I'll stop there maybe.
All right. That no, that's a great place to stop. And that's the world I want to live in too. So let's hope we can build it, and let's hope people start to adopt. And I think they are. I think now more than ever, people are realizing it. I mean, I literally can't get through a podcast anymore without someone talking about the value of data at some point. And it's clearly becoming far more a part of the national conversation. And I think the timing is right. So here's to getting people on board, getting them educated, and giving them back their data.
Absolutely, for sure. And this points to your projects too, of course. So we're all in sync.
Yep, we're all in it together.
Awesome.
Well,
Exactly.
thank you guys for listening, and thanks so much for being here, Trent. And we'll be back soon with another episode. So we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
In the name of the values that keep you alive, do not let your vision of man be distorted by the ugly, the cowardly, the mindless, and those who have never achieved his title. Do not lose your knowledge that man's proper estate is an upright posture, an intransigent mind, and a step that travels unlimited roads. Do not let your fire go out, sparked by replacing the spark in the hopeless swamps of the approximate, the not quite, the not yet, and not at all. The world you desired can be won. It exists. It is real. It is possible. It's yours.
Hey guys, I know I don't typically do sponsorships, but as a final note, I was hoping to encourage you guys to download my app, UBDI, on Google Play or the Apple App Store to start securely and privately monetizing your personal data. We allow you to aggregate your personal data in a data vault that only you have access to, that we cannot see, touch, or hold, until you decide to privately share insights with paying market researchers or other companies who are interested in studying your data once it's been aggregated with other members. So I'd love it if you guys would give it a shot. And thanks for listening.